Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody, and we are very happy to have with us for the first time the new CEO of the MTA, Tom Prendergast, and happy that he has some good news this week. Service restorations, putting back some of the things that were cut at the depths of the financial crisis. I really appreciate you coming in, Mr. Prendergast. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian.
And give us your top line, good news, but many challenges?
Absolutely. I think one of the things we were able to do yesterday at the board meeting is, as we always do in the last few years, is give a mid-year forecast in terms of how revenues are coming in, how expenses are going, and a look to the future, 2014. And the upshot is we have some ability to make a reinvestment in new services as well as restoration of some, as you talked about.
And let's go through some of those just so people know what we're talking about in case they haven't seen it or heard it. Expanded service for the G and the M train certainly was in the news. Restoration of some of the bus service. When I heard the B-37, I thought, oh, it's that juror from the Zimmerman trials, B-37. But no, it's the bus in Brooklyn.
Yes.
What else?
Restoration of half-hourly service on the Port Washington branch and Long Island Railroad. The addition of some trains, restoration of some trains that were taken off on the Long Island Railroad. And in Metro North's case, less direct service in terms of delivery as much as improved customer information. So it's a mix of restoration of some things, Brian, but as well as the institution of some new services.
And listeners, if you have questions or comments for the new head of the MTA, Tom Prendergast, we can take some on the phones. Not looking for micro-specific things, you know, like particular problems in your station, but let's talk about MTA service. Let's talk about what your priorities are. Let's talk about how you think things are run or what could help the budget. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can be the fantasy capital planner and tell us, you know, if you have a little money to spend, what would you do next? Complete the Second Avenue subway, the Grand Central LIRR link. What's at the top of your list? So you 212-433-WNYC, just to make sure you all have the number, 212-433-9692. So you mentioned in addition to some of those restorations, there are some new things coming?
Yes. And to give you an example, in the Transit Authority's case, they did a combination of service restorations and new services like you heard about from the G and the M, but they also went to the issue of the customer experience. We wanted to make sure we could let the agency heads and the people that operate the agency identify things that were priorities that they either identified or their customers. So in the case of the subway system, there are a number of locations on the system where the cycle of trains is so fast as they pull into the station that the platform gets crowded, and then it's hard for the next train to be able to discharge its passengers and get off. So they have some investments to change some of the fare control areas to get people off trains faster, off the platform, and improve that experience.
As I understand it, in the budget, you flagged controllable versus uncontrollable costs. And it was a bit of a surprise, I think, to many people that one of the fastest growing uncontrollable costs is accessoride, correct?
That's correct. The underlying responsibility that we inherit with accessoride, which is providing transportation for those that are challenged, disabled or not, is the issue of how we can provide that service in a unique way and control its costs. There isn't a transit operator in the Western Hemisphere of the United States that is not challenged by this issue. So what we want to do is we want to make sure we're providing the service, but in a way in which we can manage the costs such that they're not out of control and they're unduly influencing the budget in a negative way.
Are they going out of control because we have an increasingly elderly population or for some other reason?
For a variety of reasons. There is an increasing elderly population, so that population base is increasing. But for other systems, we went to others to try to learn from the lessons they had. You have to define the eligibility criteria very clearly, and you have to administer that very clearly. There's no doubt about it. There are a lot of people that require these services. But there are some people who would like them because they're almost door-to-door exclusive limo-type services, and we can't afford to provide it to those that aren't really qualified.
So who is qualified? Who's eligible? And that's changed a little bit recently, hasn't it?
It has, but there is a definition that the federal government uses, which we follow, which requires a medical assessment to be done. And the medical assessment could be driven by a physical disability somebody has or a mental disability, somebody that has difficulties and challenging in terms of navigating the system. But once that assessment is done and the eligibility is proven, then those people are eligible for using reduced fare rides.
Can standard buses and subways be more accessible and be made to pick up more of these folks?
Absolutely. Our bus fleet is 100% accessible in terms of wheelchair lifts and even people who are just mobility limited. We have a 100 key station program, which is part of a signed agreement with external stakeholders and the federal government. And we need to expand the system. But with 468 stations and some of the fiscal and constraints that we have, it's difficult to have an elevator at every station.
How many do have elevators? Do you know the number?
I believe it's short of 100. It's probably in the 80s. I don't know the exact number. And we're moving toward meeting that key plan of 100, I believe, in the next few years.
Ready to hear a citizen budget planner.
Absolutely.
David in Bay Ridge, you're on WNYC.
Hey, good morning.
With Tom Prendergast, CEO of the MTA. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Prendergast. I'd like to ask, this may be a weird call, but recently the MTA restored the express buses in Bay Ridge on the weekends. For a long time, they had eliminated the express buses to Manhattan on the weekends, and I live in Bay Ridge, and I have to tell you, on the weekends, it seems like there's very few people who take the express buses, and I think that this is an enormous waste of money. It's a waste of the drivers' salaries, the wear and tear on the buses, the fuel, the wear and tear on our roads by these big express buses. And while most people want to see, services restored, and I'm grateful for the B-37 in Bay Ridge being restored. I think the express buses on the weekends are just a terrible waste of money and resources.
The frugal David in Bay Ridge, the first caller ever to ask for a service cut to his neighborhood. But what about the concept that he raises express buses in general on the weekends?
He's obviously a knowledgeable rider because certainly the issue of express buses are some of the most heavily subsidized services we provide, and they're generally done in areas where there isn't a rapid transit or subway alternative, or if the length of the commute is such that something is needed. Now, there are two different types of express buses from Lower Brooklyn. One's the X-28, which is more on east of 4th Avenue, and the 27 is west of 4th Avenue. There has been a growing amount of complaints about when we stopped that service of restoring it from electeds, and that's one that I believe we are restoring on the weekends, the 27. We're also increasing the frequency during the week, but primarily because of, we're going to enter into a 14-month outage of the Montague Street Tube, and so we're trying to provide alternatives. Ideally, David, it's focused at those people who have difficulty not accessing 4th Avenue, but in the conversation I had with Brian just a few seconds ago, this issue of people who are mobility limited being able to access the lower levels of the subway. It's certainly an area we look at because there are some points what we totally agree with you on is what's the level of subsidy and what's right and what's wrong.
Now, Council Speaker and mayoral candidate Christine Quint was on the show Tuesday, and she was talking about the need to shorten some of the excessive commute times in the city as a basic economic growth strategy for New York. And one of her main proposals, as you may already know, would be for mayoral control of the MTA. Have the mayor appoint the majority of the MTA board. It's currently a state function. And directly appoint the head of the transit authority, which just covers the city buses and subways. And here she is explaining on her program why this would help.
With this mayoral control, it wouldn't be about just having the control. It would be about being able to move us forward to have more and as quickly as we could, for example, 10 additional select bus service or bus rapid transit lines across the city, finding ways to integrate the MTA into helping us expand ferry service across the city.
So would that be better for the city? You come out of the TA to the MTA, so you are a city loyalist. How do you take that perspective to your new job where you're looking at the commuter rails as well to the suburbs, and then you hear mayoral hopeful Christine Quinn?
Well, firstly, I consider myself a transportation professional, more than a city loyalist, a suburban loyalist, or whatever. The underlying premise of the creation of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority was the need, and this is some far-sighted individuals back in the 60s, that realized you needed to deal with transportation on a regional basis. And over the 40-some-year history or 50-some-year history of the MTA, that has been growing in bigger leaps and bounds. If we look just at the needs of Long Island or the needs of the lower Hudson Valley that Metro North provides services to, or the New York City in terms of its bus and subway system, we will miss that regionality. So if we start to hive off sections of the MTA and manage them specifically from the needs of that constituency base, we're going to get hurt on a regional basis.
But her premise was that the city parts of, you know, regional mass transit don't get the attention that they deserve considering the number of riders in the city. Do you agree with the premise?
Well, if you take a look at the level of bus service we provide, which from a farebox operating ratio is very low. I mean, farebox operation ratio is the amount of money the fare payers actually contribute to the operation of the system. So in other words, for every dollar of service, if 70% comes out of the farebox, that's a farebox operating ratio. And that's what it is for subways, for example. But for buses, it's as low as 40%. But when you put the two together, it's around 50%. Now, we have an excellent relationship with New York City DOT and the Commissioner Jeanette Sadikon. We have done an excellent job over the past few years, I think collectively, and others would say it, in terms of expanding the SBS footprint. They control the city streets as they should. We control the operation of the bus system. And I think irrespective of structure, there are ways you can work and deal with these priorities, the same priorities that Ms. Quinn is speaking about.
So on those priorities, last question on this, what about those 10 extra express bus routes that she was calling for as something that would, you know, contribute to even being transformative to being able to commute and grow the city's economy because workers could get around easily?
Well, we'd have to deal with the specifics of which routes that they're speaking about. We don't want to put an express bus route in that competes with the subway system because that's working against ourselves. We get the highest efficiency of service delivered through the subways. But one of the problems with the subway network is they're radial for the most part. The G is the only crosstown route. So if we had a burgeoning need for origin and destination between the center of Brooklyn and the center of Queens or part of Brooklyn and Queens, that would be better served by not building a new rail line but an SBS route. And that's what we've done. We've focused on those issues with New York City DOT.
Do you, by the way, have that growing need? People always say, oh, it's the old model that everything goes to and from Manhattan except the G train. People are commuting from all over to all over now, but is that really true?
It is definitely changing. When I was president of the Long Island Railroad, the majority of the Long Island Railroad customers worked in the fire industries, finance, insurance, and real estate. They lived in the island. They worked in lower Manhattan or Manhattan. That's changing. Look at the reverse peak commute on Metro North from people from the city going out to Stamford, going out to White Plains. We just had a 20-year needs assessment done, and Bill Wheeler, our head of planning, made a presentation. And, you know, we're not only dealing with the Xers and the Yers, but the millennials, the people born in the 80s that are now using the system. The average car per family is maybe a car lower. Instead of 2.5, it's 1.4 or something like that. I don't know the exact numbers, but less. They flock to the system. Our ridership growth, when I left senior vice president of Subways, we carried 3.5 million people a day. We now carry 5.4. Without expanding the system, we're carrying people on weekends. We're carrying people at nights. And so certainly the demographics are changing and the riding population is.
The CEO of the MTA, Tom Prendergast, with us here on the Brian Lehr Show. And Peter in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I have two suggestions, mostly about efficiency of travel. One is the train time displays that are on some lines, such as 1 and 2 and 3, but not on the others. They're great for letting people know when the next train arrives, and I just want it to be everywhere. Also, on the outside of the station as well. So when you change from a bus, you know, if you need to speed up and run for the next train or you can walk more leisurely. So it seems just something very simple. And bus time, for example, is a great introduction. It lets you know when the next bus is and just makes your commute so much easier.
Peter, thank you very much.
Yeah, Peter, those are the two excellent points. And those are examples of people, as some of the newer riders on the system, the things that they're not only asking for, they're expecting. Bus time is a tremendous success for us. Sometime in 2014, the early part of 2014, bus time will be implemented across all five boroughs of the system. It's a tremendous tool for people to make a decision. Do they sit at their desk for another 10 minutes, or do they go down to the street and board the bus or leave their home, for example? And that is on a pretty fast track. Unfortunately, the countdown clocks, as we call them, on the IRT or the numbered lines, they're already in place. They're also in place on the L line, the Canarsie line, because we put a new signal system in. I wish we could do it as fast on the remainder of the system, the lettered lines, but because of the technology of the signal system, it's going to go slower. But it is one of the highest priorities we have, because we do know people make decisions and vote with their feet or decide what to do and when to do it based on that information.
And that, the display clocks, was one of the biggest things that I saw you learn that millennials want in your presentation on that, because people who are growing up in the information age expect to be informed. It makes sense. Some of the others, because we took callers in response to that the other day, we asked for millennials to call in, people born after 1980, with their transit wish list. And some of the others that we got included, from Sarah in Manhattan, street-level system maps for both subways and buses. These could be mounted, she says, at the entrance and could be paid for with a banner ad. Also, communication between train operators for smooth transfers. She says, if I'm pulling into Grand Central on a 6 train, the 4 and 5 across the platform should leave as soon as the 6 arrives, or shouldn't leave as soon as the 6 arrives. It should wait for that transfer. And here's a caller from that segment. Diana from Bushwick with her short list.
Connecting LaGuardia to trains.
That's a good one.
LaGuardia Airport.
That's a good one.
Also more Brooklyn-Queens connections. Mm. We just have the G that kind of goes up there and then with the NQR, but usually you have to go straight through Manhattan. It's completely tedious.
How about those?
The connection to the airport is one that's been on the books for years.
Why is that so hard? You got it now to Kennedy.
Because if you would take a look at where the existing rail lines are, Brian, and then try to an extent and pick a point on one of those lines, so the end of the Astoria line, for example, in Queens, one of the closest ones, or somewhere off the Queens Boulevard line or the 7, and draw a point from that dot to LaGuardia Airport, there generally isn't easily navigable rights away without going through residential neighborhoods. So there's that issue. Certainly everybody wants a rail connection to the airport. One of the things we can probably do faster is a BRT, a bus rapid transit to the airport, and then work on a rail application. But that's a high priority for sure. The other point she raised, which is the issue of Brooklyn to Queens, once again, as the ridership changes and we have a greater need for that, we need to do it with BRT.
As we discussed. You're counting on federal reimbursements, as I understand it, for the repairs to South Ferry and the Rockaways and the GNR tunnels damaged by Sandy. Where do we stand on that?
Very good. I mean, there was a tremendous job the New York delegation did in terms of making sure that we got our fair share of money to deal with Sandy. The Sandy money, some $50 to $60 billion for everybody. Transportation, transit gets somewhere a little bit north of, a little bit more of than $10 billion. New York MTA share is broken down into two pieces. Recovery, which is restoring the system to the condition it was in the day before the storm, is about $4.7 billion in funding. Mitigation, what we can do to harden the system to protect it against future storm events, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's high winds, whether it's heat, whatever, from $4.1 billion. And we're working very closely with the Federal Transit Administration and getting those funds to us that we can effectuate those repairs.
What about the recent derailments on the Hudson Line, the LIRR, the number one train? Was it Sandy after effects that caused those, or the excessive heat, or was there any pattern?
There's no pattern, and there's no connection between any of them, but I must tell you that any derailment is considered to be something, A, we don't want to happen. It's treated as a very serious event. And so we make sure that we double down and take a look to see what the underlying causes of those were. I can assure you that the system is safe and reliable, the service we deliver a day. It's not due to lack of financing or lack of attention. In some cases, it's just a failure of a component or someone didn't do a task as well as they should have done.
The first comment on our website this morning on the page for this interview is from a transit worker who writes, I would like to ask, what are the chances of seeing a fair contract and how much more time do we have to wait for a pay raise? So when will there be a contract? He uses net zero a lot. You use the term net zero a lot to talk about how you would budget. What does that mean?
Well, you know, when the financial crisis probably reached its peak, which was 2009, 2010, you remember we had the pretty serious drastic service cuts, some $90 million worth of service cuts across the MTA family. And first of all, the organization through efficiencies generated quite a bit of savings, hundreds of millions of dollars, some $800 million. There was money saved through renegotiation of contracts with vendors, things of that nature. The fareholders paid up because we had some increases in fares. And the share that we expected out of the labor unions, what we call three net zeros, which is we'll give them a raise, but we need to offset it with work world changes. But at that time, the contract awarded through arbitration was 4%, 4%, and 3%, 4%, 4%, and 3% when everybody else was at a zero. So looking forward, we have had consistently, we had on our financial plan since 2009, three net zeros. So we'll sit down with labor and we'll try to figure out ways where we can get them money, but through work world changes and things of that nature.
And how about capital priorities? I threw that out earlier. Nobody's bitten on exactly that one to call up and say what their priorities for building would be. I think for Mr. Loda, it was bringing the LIRR into Grand Central. And also West Side expansion of the number 7 train.
Yeah, the mega projects that we have are the expansion. So the first one that you'll see come into fruition is the extension of 7 West to the west side of Manhattan from Times Square.
But not to New Jersey, right?
It's not in our plans right now, and it's financially infeasible for us. The second issue is completion of Fulton Transit Terminal, which will be done probably midpoint of next year. Then the Second Avenue Subway, the first leg of Second Avenue Subway, which will bring people and offload some of the demand on the upper extensions of the upper portions of the Lexington Avenue line, and that'll come into fruition, I think, 2016. And then Grand Central access for Long Island Railroad customers will come in the 2019 timeframe.
Why is that so important? For all that money and all that digging and everything else, all you're doing is saving Long Island commuters who would come in anyway to Penn Station a little, you know, Manhattan commute time if they happen to work on the east side?
Well, yes, but about 60% of the people, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but at the time the MTA was created in 1967, 68, one of the first projects identified was a Long Island Railroad access to the east side. And at that time, Midtown Manhattan is where all the jobs were. And so they wanted to create a new terminal, 3rd Avenue, actually. But then it morphed into Grand Central in terms of a lower level. But it would actually save not only people's time because they wouldn't have to commute back across either on the shuttle or the E and the F back around what we call the horn. It would offload it would free up capacity on those segments of the system for people that are riding.
Does that connect with Mayor Bloomberg's plan for development of big office towers in the Grand Central area? The Times took an editorial position skeptical of that today and said what they really need is, you know, instead of just adding a ton of more workers there, better infrastructure, including more transit, if they're going to think about making that area more crowded.
I think they go hand in hand, and I think the mayor and the city's Economic Development Corporation and planning departments have recognized that. Ideally, you want to be in a position where you put demand in a place where transportation can support it. And we shouldn't be doing it in a way where the transportation demand issue is left to an afterthought. So there's an awful lot of coordination between the MTA and the city with respect to if they do increase the zoning and make some changes there, we have infrastructure money to improve that element of the system.
Two last things, real quick. When will I be able to ride a Second Avenue subway train?
I think the Second Avenue subway is supposed to be done in 2016, so the first phase of that. And, you know, the entire length of it down to Hanover Square is going to take decades, okay? But that first segment from where it's at right now, like around 96th Street, coming back over and riding, coming down, I think, the Broadway line, you should be able to ride a train on that in 2016.
And last question, is City Bike decreasing ridership?
Don't know yet. It's too early to tell. But, you know, it's anything we can do to take people out of their cars. And also what the City Bike does is it provides a nice end of trip option for people who want to get off at a rail terminal or a bus and they want to go the last few blocks to their destination and come back. And I think it's a very good program.
And so no surprise that we see the greatest demand or among the greatest demand are the Penn Station City Bikes. By the end of the morning commute, they're not even available. That's been written up. And
Grand Central, too.
Reported on by WNYC, so no surprise. But the critics of city bikes say, look, the places you can get to on a city bike, considering where the ports are not places you would drive your car to and from. They're places you would otherwise take a bus and subway to and from. Not true?
I don't know. I'd have to take a look at the exact location, but you know, the usage is going to dictate how successful the program is. And so far, I've seen usage pretty high.
The CEO of the MTA, Tom Prendergast, with a relatively good news budget this week. Happy to say, indications that New York State, since a lot of this is state money, digging out of the financial crisis. Anything else you want to say to your riders out there before you go?
We never forget our last rush hour. We never forget our last storm. We're focused on that, and we're continuing to try to be responsive to the needs of our riders.
Thanks so much for coming into our studio. I look forward to having you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, how Congress almost killed the NSA data surveillance program last night in an unusual cross-party lines vote. Somewhere in the Moscow airport, Edward Snowden is almost smiling. We'll give you details.